So Bill Daly, my fellow Chicago Tribune food and dining reporter, what did you have for breakfast this morning? Because for a long time, you had a donut every day, and then it was a pudding, and you posted it on Instagram all the time.
Well, I actually, you know, when I think about it, I had two breakfasts.
Oh.
The secret breakfast was a cup of espresso and three Hershey Kisses out of the freezer.
What?
Because the freezing makes the chocolate firmer. But my official breakfast was a blueberry muffin from downstairs at a local coffee shop.
Is that going to be the daily breakfast now?
You know, I really miss that donut. I miss my donut, my glazed donut. I miss the icing. I miss the toroid shape. I miss everything about the donut.
Well, hopefully the construction at the so-called Sad Cafe, the Tribune Tower, will get finished pretty soon for you.
I hope so, too. From Saucy Chicago, Illinois, this is Chewing.
I'm Louisa Chu, Chicago Tribune food and dining reporter and trained chef.
And I'm Bill Daly, Chicago Tribune food and dining reporter and habitual Instagrammer.
This week on Chewing, we talk potstickers and dating, plus mayo and mild sauces.
I share the importance of potstickers while dating.
And Bill reveals the stories behind his stories on mayo and Chicago's mild sauce.
Then Louisa brings me and Monica a complicated beverage, but will we drink it?
All that and more on this pot stickers and saucy episode of Chewing. So, Bill, thank you so much for joining us here at Chewing as our special guest co-host. I'm sorry that the person who is across the control board is actually here right now because she was still supposed to be out on leave. But thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here, and it's good to see both you and Monica Eng.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to see you, Bill. Maybe not the other person.
Monica, we missed you. Come on.
Don't forget, I'm control the board.
Right, I know.
Control the whole board.
Every time. So, Bill, as we were getting ready to chat about what we want to talk about for this episode, one of the things that surprised me was that you mentioned the importance of potstickers in your dating profile.
I do. I include that in my dating profile because I really love potstickers, and I'm always looking for the best potsticker I can find in Chicago. And you know what? I'm open to suggestions.
Is it a euphemism? Me.
Well, actually, you know, that's what one of the dating sites thought. So I had to change to potsticker dumpling.
You know, don't look up dumpling on the Urban Dictionary. All I have to say, don't do it.
Oh, boy. Well, Bill, as you and regular listeners of Chewing know, Monica's been away writing her debut book. She went to China, and it actually happens to be about magical dumplings and noodles. So I thought that she could actually come and join us as a special guest who will hopefully remain, you know, quiet as a mouse unless she's called upon. So what does, if we don't mind us asking, like, what is the importance of the potstickers in the dating profile? Like, people have to like dumplings or potstickers specifically too?
Well, I mean, it's a good conversation starter, you know, and I'm always curious to see what sort of suggestions I get, if any. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times if people say, oh, what do you do? You know, they'll say, hey, what do you do for a living? You go, I'm a food writer. And some people might say, oh, great, expensive meals. I'm like, no, reporter's salary. Right. Not going to happen.
We don't cover that beat, yeah.
And so it's interesting to kind of talk about it because, you know, in some ways it's also, and I think Monica would agree, that going out to dinner with someone is a great way to see how they act, how they are, how do they order,
and how do they treat the service staff?
Exactly. And are they adventuresome? I mean, you know, I want pot stickers. You know, I don't want to just be eating, something really boring all the time.
Can you share with us perhaps a promising pot sticker date or perhaps a disastrous pot sticker date? One that you might want to share with us and just a few, maybe three of our Chewing listeners?
I wouldn't say it. But
including my mom.
Right, who listens twice.
I've had a couple of interesting disaster dates. There was the guy who couldn't eat almost anything. And we were it wasn't pasta, it was like a Vietnamese restaurant. And he was so obnoxious. I said, oh my God, he's going to have to go. Then there was the other guy that I met at up in Andersonville who I was 3 minutes late when I arrived. He was already ordered his food and eating. Like, check him away.
What? Wow. Wait a minute. Hold on.
I was like, really? Okay. I know you're hungry. There was the guy. You know, I take photos of all my food because mm-hmm. I post them on Instagram and Facebook. And, you know, it's sort of a Warholian project. I do it. Mm-hmm. So then there was the guy who, when I was about ready to take the photo, would inch his finger or his fork into the frame, which was sort of in some ways hilarious, but he would do that.
And Bill, it's a good test to see if they Googled you, because if they Google you, they would see that you, me, Phil Vitale, was it Kevin Pang? I think we let Pang come along. We're out in that van for days going out and trying pot stickers.
Remember how much fun that was?
That was so much fun. We went all over eating pot sticker after pot sticker after pot sticker. And then they'd look it up and they'd say, oh, well, why don't we go to, what was the name of the place? Oh, my gosh, my family always goes there for dim sum. Super old style Chinese on Wentworth.
That's funny. Actually, I happen to know the place because I saw the story, but I did not hear about the scary van, which I don't even like.
What is scary? Just because they were journalists in it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I don't like the cars. Actually,
the reason we were in the van was because to give every place an even playing field. We thought we would order it and then take it out to the van and eat it immediately.
Oh. That was Phil Vitale's minivan, right? That was the soccer van, I think. Yeah.
Okay, that I would do. Yeah. That I would do. And the restaurant is Wan Kao, actually.
Right, there we go. Yeah.
And it was a restaurant that I wrote about for our Essential Chicago Experiences earlier this year. And they actually do have surprisingly great dim sum, which I was turned on to again by the presently absent Iris Lin, but always with us, because Wan Kao has actually become, Iris, I'm sorry, cover your ears, the new, like, hipster spot again, actually, or hip, because the kids now go because the dim sum is actually really quite good, fairly inexpensive, plus they have really strong, good cocktails. So, like a couple
those big bowls.
Yeah. So, there's actually, like, a couple of really top mixologists here in Chicago who end up going to Wan Kao not only for the pot stickers, but also good dim sum and pretty good and strong like Singapore Sling cocktails and Blue Hawaii. I had one of those.
Boy. I think their pot stickers have gone down the hill because I did go there and they were not as delicious as I remember them being when we gave them, I think, number one.
Yeah. That was your favorite back in the day. But
the appeal of big bowl cocktails aside, I mean, what is there not to love about a pot sticker?
Right.
When they're done well, they are fantastic. Crunchy on the bottom, soft on the top, full of delicious porky, gingery, garlicky meat on the inside.
Well, I want to actually point out that Monica, who I, as mentioned, is back from writing your debut book, you just discovered, I think you had for the first time, a sort of a world-famous dumpling, which I actually think would be a good test, a different kind of pot sticker, perhaps, Bill, that you could test out maybe like on a second or third date, those little...
You're assuming there is a second or third date.
Exactly. When it gets to the next level.
There are Shanghainese bao that's, I believe, called Shenjin bao, or Shenjin baozi. And they have a super crunchy bottom, but they're also full of soup. I mean, they spray soup all over the place.
Well,
and they have a little twirly top.
Right. Yeah, so it's like a thicker wrapper. It's kind of like a cross sort of between like a soup dumpling and a bao and a pot sticker. And actually I did discover here in Chicago a place very close to our office, Bill, which is currently in Tribune Tower. Across the street at Lao Szechuan on Michigan Avenue has a Shenzhen Bao.
Well, let's see if they're any good.
Exactly. And they actually do wrap their own dumplings. You can watch them in the windows because a lot of places here in Chicago, actually, when I did my whole big Xiaolong Bao story, are using a secret frozen kind. But those baos, as well as the Xiaolong baos, they are actually wrapping them live. So maybe that could be a good test for a second date. Okay, second date.
Now, question, though, about this. If there's soup inside, are they small enough that you can eat them in one bite? And if not, what is the etiquette of that?
They could be small enough to eat in one bite if you really, like, jam them in there. But they're about the size of a golf ball. Mm-hmm. Bigger than a golf ball, just slightly bigger. So, yeah, I mean, well, I don't want to give away too much about my book, but let's just say there's one scene where the bad guy doesn't know that these are full of blazing hot soup. And the girl, my protagonist, says, oh, I'm just going to take a bite of my bow. And she sprays his eyeballs with blazing hot boiling soup and gets away from the bad guy.
Monica, spoiler alert, hello.
You know, there are about 80,000 other words in the book.
Okay, so. All right, so hopefully.
But you know, that is genius.
Yes, yes. Because a lot of people don't know about these bites. They don't think that you can, like, walk around with something in your hand that's going to spray boiling hot soup at you.
Okay, so pot stickers are Bill's sort of date baseline test food. Monica, when you were dating, or I don't know what kind of relationship
I've never
you
dated.
Have
went straight okay. from, you know, grade school to marriage
there you
to
go. So
long-term relationship.
Do you have, like, a food that you test your significant other on or, you know, just in social settings?
Well, I mean, I will go someplace, and if he is a boring orderer, that's kind of a deal breaker.
Exactly.
I mean, luckily, the man in my life, he loves to cook. He's a terrific cook, and he is just as interested in flavorful food as I.
Oh, very diplomatic answer. And so, Bill, it was kind of funny when we were discussing this that you very generously, hopefully ask me what's on my dating profile. Boy, you are extremely optimistic for my social life. I mean, I don't even remember. I after hearing about the guy who ordered and was eating already, I have no dating profile anywhere. Yeah, so, but I guess if anybody is listening here chewing, I don't know, maybe we should have a dating
right in
game.
Yeah, let's see if we can find Louisa a date.
Maybe.
When we were doing a dating story at the Tribune when I was still there, they had us each write in our profile, and I think I was like, I'm 37 and ready to date any man who doesn't mind a bossy lady. Didn't get a lot of takers, but that goes double for Louisa.
Monica, boy, I guess we really have missed you.
Yes.
So, Bill, you recently wrote a wildly popular story on a, to me, I thought was kind of surprising that it would be such a wildly surprising story, but was not to you, on mayonnaise.
Right. And
yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And what sparked it was, besides we're talking about sandwiches,
yes,
is my mother always had two rules about sandwiches. One was that you had to put a thin coating of butter on the bread to waterproof it for whatever else went on top of it.
Mm.
And in her case, it always had to be Cane's mayonnaise. And Cane's is a New England brand.
Mm.
She did not want Hellman's. She didn't want any other flavor. It had to be Cane's. So growing up and later in life, there always had to be a jar of Cane's mayonnaise in the refrigerator for her because that's what she was going to stick at. And people are extremely loyal to their mayonnaise brands.
Okay.
Can I ask what it tasted like?
Well, it tasted, it tied for 11th.
Tied for 11th.
Out of 13. It was down there. It sort of
what
had
did
a,
they know?
Our tasters were not impressed with it. One said it was rather bland, nothing stands out. And I kept saying my mother would be saying, no, wrong.
Kind That's of like right. New England food.
Right.
No. Come on.
Okay, and we should clarify.
Those are fighting words.
Right. We should clarify that you are, as I like to say, the one and only Bill Daly, especially here in Chicago, because there's another Bill Daly guy who sometimes is.
He faints on
exactly
stage.
Exactly. I don't know about that. Anyway, and also because, Bill, you, I think, having the name Bill Daly being seemingly like such a Chicago name, you actually a relative newcomer to our fair city, and you are a, again, as you mentioned, a New Englander
That's
by
right.
birth. Yeah. And as we were discussing earlier, like, it goes back hundreds of years. So you're originally from where?
I was born in Massachusetts outside of Boston, but my family is from Connecticut.
Okay, so Connecticuter.
But Bill, what does this Cane's mayonnaise taste like? Let's say if we're on a spectrum from Miracle Whip to Hellman's.
Oh, God, what would it be? What do you think, Louisa? Do you remember?
You know, I did not get to participate in the mayonnaise
right.
taste off. And I actually am kind of grateful because I was off working on my bread story. And as I like to say, I'm very sorry for people who do suffer from celiac disease, but I refuse to be gluten intolerant. But boy, my tummy was upset. And the idea of tasting mayonnaise, I think, was really making me nosh. So anyway, so I'm
I don't want to sound like I'm not answering the question, but I'm not going to answer the question. I think Cane's is its own.
What are you hiding, Mr. Daly?
Right.
Cane's is its own thing. But I will tell you that Hellman's tied with Kraft Real Mayo in second place. And Miracle Whip did well compared to what people thought it was. People were like dissing other mayos thinking it was Miracle Whip, and it wasn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And again, we should clarify, too, that this was all store-bought mayonnaise.
All store-bought mayonnaise.
It was store-bought mayonnaise taste-off.
Or mayo-like brands like Miracle Whip.
That's so, right.
Yeah. I should also do the caveat that the mayonnaise were all mayonnaise that I could buy at a supermarket, that you didn't have to go to a membership store to get it, because some people complained.
And so it was a story that ran during our sandwich month last month, or I guess in any case, you'll find it online at chicagotribune.com. And should we give the best and worst?
How about you do a top 13, drum roll please, starting from the bottom. Tell us what went from least favorite to most favorite.
Our lowest scoring was the Heinz Real Mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. Above that tied was Cane's, the New England favorite of my mother, and Trader Joe's Real Mayonnaise.
Oh.
That was a little surprise now.
Wow.
It's funny because the way this is done, it goes from 1 to 13, and you know, it's not. Above that would be Sir Kensington's Mayonnaise.
I don't know that
and
one.
Then we had a three-way tie between Blue Plate Real Mayonnaise, which is from another Southern brand, Kraft Miracle Whip Dressing, and 365 Everyday Value Mayonnaise, which comes from Whole Foods.
Oh.
And then above that, again, another tie between Hampton Creek Just Mayo Spread and Dressing.
Which I love.
Which is a non-GMO, egg-free, dairy-free, gluten-free product.
Our good friends that we've had on before.
And the O Organics Organic Mayonnaise.
Hmm.
Duke's was there in, I guess, in fourth place. And there was a tie between Hellman's Real Mayonnaise and Kraft Real Mayo. And our winner, and by quite a significant margin, was Kewpie Mayonnaise, the Japanese export version.
Mm-hmm. Kewpie. Now, does that have some MSG in it?
It sure does.
Well,
MSG makes everything taste
better.
That's
right.
It does.
We're going to maybe get to that a little bit later in the game that we'd like to call Will We Eat It, or perhaps Will We Drink It in this case. But again, I'm so surprised. I mean, I'm so grateful that you did the story because now we know, but I was so surprised that there was such a fervent mayo fan base there, because again, you think that they would just be like, it's okay, fine, you know, I mean,
no, I'm passionate about my Hellman's, and I think that, yeah, mayonnaise can really make or break a sandwich.
I know.
I did want to clarify, did you say that your mother put both butter and mayo on her sandwiches?
She did.
And butter and mayo on both sides?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Well, always the butter, because she wanted to keep the sandwich waterproof.
Waterproof.
So it was a layer of butter and then a layer of mayo.
Yeah, or but the mayo would be on the other stuff. But you know, if you put butter like on a tea sandwich, it doesn't matter what you put on top of it. The butter just mellows the flavor out a little bit.
Right, and then the cucumbers don't leak all their water onto the bread.
Or even if you did like a curried egg salad on a tea sandwich, it would. Or even the roast beef with the little strap, you know, delicious.
So, the importance of mayonnaise and butter in a sandwich. The story that you just finished, we're getting a sneak peek on, Bill, is about Chicago's very own and little known, perhaps to some people, and mysterious mild sauce.
Yes, and it was a product of our Harkin collaboration.
You say the Harkin collaboration? Hark, what's that?
Oh, boy. That's natural. Okay.
So, I'm speechless.
Understandably, Bill, sorry. But so Harkin actually was born out of our friend Jen Brandel's Curious City, which Monica happens to be working on now, which came out of this very place. We're actually sitting in the studios at BEZ, not in the back of my car that we often tape our podcast in, Bill. So if you have a question for us, me and Bill and our fellow reporters at Chicago Tribune's food and dining section, you can write us at chicagotribune.com/whatsthestory, and we might report on it. So this was a question that we got through What's the Story. Somebody wanted to know about the history of mild sauce. And yep. So you are lucky. I wanted that story. You got that story.
And the person who wrote in was Barton J. Taylor. He grew up in Chicago. And he now lives about 20 miles east of Atlanta in Lithonia, Georgia.
Mm. And so he wanted to know about, so mild sauce, what is it?
Well, mild sauce, he would say, is a taste of home.
Oh.
Yes, he would. And he's right. for people who leave Chicago, apparently it's something that people really miss. It's a mixture of barbecue sauce, ketchup, and hot sauce. Gary Wivey at the Pitmaster at Lincoln Park's Barn & Company.
My personal barbecue life coach.
Suggests the proportions are 5 parts barbecue sauce to 2 parts ketchup and 1 part hot sauce.
And you're talking Louisiana hot sauce.
You just said hot sauce.
Okay, because that's what it tastes like to me. It tastes like a Louisiana. It's not an habanero. It's not a Tabasco.
No. And it is often found at a lot of Southside restaurants
and
here in Chicago.
Yep,
exactly. And often you'll hear about it in relation to fried chicken places like Harold's Fried Chicken here in Chicago, famous for their fried hard mild sauce. And it's got that kind of, again, orange flavor.
I have to admit that I had never had it before. So this story was really... Well, I've only been here since 2004, you think by now. But I find it really fascinating because, I love fried chicken, and I just love the idea of the sauce sort of on the chicken, and the chicken still, the skin is still crisp,
yes.
and it just added a different sort of savory flavor element that was really kind of interesting. And I said, because I was sort of thinking, am I going to want fried chicken with sauce on? I'm like, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I really was surprised. I really thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
So we should note that it comes on the side. It's not like they say, do you want mild sauce on that? And they pour it all
on.
Oh,
yes, they do.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Depends
every
on where
place,
you are.
Oh, every place I've done this, do you want mild sauce with that? And then you have your little containers on the side. They poured it all over your chicken before they served it to you?
It was fascinating.
Oh, Monica.
Oh, my gosh. That's sort of like Nashville hot.
That's like the equivalent of getting the fork in the Chinese restaurant, okay? Can I say?
At Lem's, they give it to you on the side.
Oh, it's a barbecue place. It's a different thing than fried chicken. But often, if you go to some place like I was at Honey One recently or Harold's recently, most of the regulars will order sauce on. So I'm at the Harold's in Wicker Park. I'm here to ask about the flavor of mild sauce.
My name is Malika. I'm a cashier at Harold's Chicken.
For people who have not had a chance to taste mild sauce, can you describe the flavor of it?
It's sweet and tangy.
And is it spicy at all?
No.
Okay. And so usually how do people eat it?
On the chicken.
Yeah.
Or fries.
Okay. Yeah. How do you serve it? Do you like toss it when it's hot with salt and pepper here?
No, we just pour it on there with salt and pepper or lemon pepper.
Okay. And do you toss it around or just pour it on top?
Pour it on top.
Okay. All right. I know you might think this is funny. A lot of people, actually, that I know who are really into food in Chicago, they never heard of mild sauce.
Okay. So, I didn't know that.
You didn't know such people existed, right?
I knew what mild sauce was.
Right, exactly. So we're in the middle of a rainstorm right now, which is why it's like one of the few times you're probably empty here, right?
Yes.
So do you know what are the ingredients in a mild sauce by chance?
No, I don't know that.
Okay. And so if people aren't around Chicago, what do you think that they could put in a mild sauce to make it taste like mild sauce? Like, it's kind of like ketchup, it's kind of like barbecue, it's kind of like hot sauce?
Sort of. I don't think it's like hot sauce at all.
Okay. Yeah?
I don't know the ingredients.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So sweet and tangy. All right. So for people who come to Harold's for the first time, what do you think is like the first thing that they should try, the first order they should try?
Wings with mild sauce.
Salt and pepper?
With salt and pepper or lemon pepper. Oh. I like lemon pepper. So.
Oh. But lemon and pepper is a new thing because you're young.
Lemon pepper and mild sauce.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for old people like me and my co-host Monica, maybe salt and pepper. And then for you who's a little younger, lemon and pepper.
Lemon pepper.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. You had, when we were talking about this originally, you were looking at if there's any relation between the mild sauce and a also surprisingly lesser known in Chicago sauce, mumbo sauce.
Right, which is a barbecue sauce that was developed here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brand name now. And it's RGB's mumbo sauce.
Do you know the mumbo sauce, Monica?
Yeah, they sent us a whole box of it when Nyla did that story
for... Yes, I used that story for Nyla.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's it. Yes, they gave us a whole box of it when you produced that story for the long-lost WBEZ Afternoon Shift starring Nyla Boodoo.
Yeah, I was just on Nyla's show just recently. But in any case, so yes, mumbo sauce. So was there any connection?
Nothing that I could really firmly pin down. There was certain talks that perhaps there was some sort of similarities or relationship akin to. I talked to Allison E. Collins, who's a CEO of Select Brands, mm-hmm. which makes RGB. And to her, she said that mild sauce wasn't so much its own condiment, but it was a flavor. And she talked about that when customers came to her father's restaurant, they would say, I don't want the hot sauce, I want the mild sauce. And to her, that's how she felt. She thought that sort of that phrase mild sauce developed.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so it's sort of a watering down of like, okay, I don't want it to be that hot. I want something that's going to give me heat, but not with some sweetness.
Never be a sweetness, right. More than heat.
Mm-hmm. And maybe not water, not literally, but it's like, yeah, more of like a cutting of the heat of that flavor. But
then Charmaine Rickett, who's CEO of Uncle Remus Spicy mm-hmm. Fried Chicken, says that her father came up with the idea that customers were coming in and sort of like ordering, that they were ordering, hot sauce and ketchup, and that people started to mix them together.
Mm-hmm.
And then her father, she said, in the 70s and 80s, started experimenting with barbecue sauce with that. And so she said he came up with his own proprietary blend.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't. And then, but you hear different things. I mean, for example, Charla Draper, who owns, it's a food business, a food consultant, and she's also blogs about food at Chow Chow in Seoul, said she thought it was an oops moment. That somehow somebody,
like a Reese's peanut butter cup?
Exactly. And that off it went.
Can I tell you, actually, kids don't know what that Reese's peanut butter cup reference means? Because actually it just popped up on my Facebook memories recently that I think it was our, again, dear own Iris Lynn, who didn't know that the chocolate and peanut butter crashing together was like a commercial at some point. So kids, look it up.
I know. I was doing a story on the invention of Korean chicken wings in Chicago. And I said, and it was just like that Reese's peanut butter moment. And I got all these blank looks from these millennials and 20 and 30-year-olds.
Right. Yeah.
And they're like, look, what? What are you talking
right.
about?
Totally.
Like, YouTube to the rescue.
Right. But so in Uncle Remus, again, another famous Chicago fried chicken place. So, and again, mild sauce has not really been codified. Let's just really stress that here in Chicago, but it is a known Chicago thing. And mumbo sauce, for people who don't know, again, similar to that mild sauce flavor that you're describing, is most popular in Washington, D.C. Chinese takeout places on fried rice. So go figure. We don't really not quite sure. This might be one of those remaining food mysteries, but we'll be able to read all about your story sometime soon. Maybe somebody can look this up now, might be up as we speak.
And as I write in the story that, I'm like, well, who's right, who's wrong? And tell me. I mean, I found every time I've ever done a story that looks at a food origin or a recipe origin,
mm-hmm.
maybe there's something I didn't know or somebody has an insight. So I always welcome people. Don't mm-hmm. call and scream at me. Just send me an email to wdaily, W-D-A-L-E-Y, at chicagotribune.com. I'd love to hear what people have to say and what their theories are.
Yeah, some people said that if you want to find out the origin of a food, put up a half-baked theory, and boy, the people will come in, the vultures will come in to tear you apart.
There's actually a name for that syndrome, but I don't remember what it's called. So, yes, so Bill's mayo sauce story is out there, and read all about that now.
Do you consider mayonnaise a sauce?
Yes. It's one of the mother sauces. What?
Good.
Oh, this was a
testing.
So, Bill, thank you so much again for joining us as a special guest host here at Chewing. As regular listeners know, we like to play a little game called Will She Eat It, where typically I'm the one who brings in something interesting, delicious, challenging for Monica and Iris to taste to sort of explore different cultural norms. And today, we actually have a special pairing because we're welcoming back Monica into the fold, the prodigal daughter. Not only do we have a very special Will We Eat It, but also a Will We Drink It, because you actually have shared with us, and I actually brought it with us from the test kitchen, the number one mayonnaise, which was the Kewpie, the original Japanese, as well as the American version. I brought these in from the test kitchens. They're still pretty cold, but I figured that we probably wanted to taste it with something. It was kind of tough just to taste straight mayonnaise on its own.
I'm not going to drink mayo if that's
you're
what you're
not going to drink
if that's
mayo.
Where you're headed.
But I actually brought in a sort of matching beverage. When I was doing our sandwiches and bread, sandwich month bread story, I went out to Mitsuwa, the Japanese supermarket here in the Chicago area, and found the Ramune carbonated soft drink. Are you familiar with this beverage,
no.
Bill? Well, it's got a special sort of trick. It's a kind of complicated way to open it. It's got a little marble in a bottle, but a flavor I'd never seen before, actually. So I'm going to give that to you. And
it has a happy water drop on it.
It does. Always very happy suicide food and drink, I suppose, the foods and drinks that like to be eaten or drunk. So what?
Can we find out what this flavor is?
Yeah, well, we're going to taste that in just a moment. But to taste... So I wanted to taste the Kewpie mayo, let Monica join us in tasting the American and Japanese Kewpie mayo, and a thematically sort of matching yogurt ramune drink. But then I figured we need to eat it on something. And Monica, you missed actually the Sweets and Snacks Expo, the AKA Candy Show, where they had a new product that I wrote about at the Trib. I knew you would have to try. These are the brand new Cheetos Flamin' Hot Chipotle Ranch, Monica, just for you to taste with some of the Kewpie mayo. So I'm going to offer, again, the Kewpie American and Japanese mayo, as well as the Chipotle Ranch Flamin' Hot Crunchy Cheetos and the yogurt ramune. So Bill and Monica, will you eat and or drink it?
Sure.
You know, some people go into anaphylactic shock when they have too much MSG, and I think that's what you're trying to do to
no,
me.
No. Well, it's a good
How
thing,
How much
then.
Has Ajinomoto paid you to try to get me to eat all of this
Well, as Bill
sodium glutamate?
Will explain, the new American Kewpie
does not have MSG.
So there you go, right? They had you in mind, Monica. What do you know? They knew that you'd be back and you probably ate too much MSG, which is demonized in all over the world, in China. But while I prepare this, please go right ahead, Bill.
Well, the description that was on the website for the new Kewpie USA mayonnaise, which is made in California, says, known for its umami taste, Kewpie mayonnaise is made entirely from egg yolks and a unique blend of vinegars, creating a rich and creamy texture unlike any other brand.
Mm.
And there is no MSG in it.
May I take a look at the American one?
All right. So.
It still has that sort of like hand lotion bottle shape, doesn't it?
Right?
Yeah.
See,
I like in my mayo.
Yeah, I love the classic bottle
shape.
Oh, I
do too.
Yeah, because it's so minimal and it's kind of too soft, actually. So it's sort of...
It's squishy.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful and elegant. I've written in my comments to you, Bill, I am really not liking the new bottle shape. So, Monica, are you going to have some of the new Chipotle Flamin' Hot Ranch?
I guess I will. You know, I'd
Since
like to say...
now you're cutting the MSG here.
In my boring life as a food and health writer. Mm-hmm. I've done stories about how MSG masquerades on several labels in different names mm-hmm. and how many people who have acute anaphylactic and other reactions to it have asked the FDA to please just use a standard labeling. Mm. And one of the ways they masquerade MSG is through yeast extract. So mm-hmm. this does contain yeast extract.
So getting the health back into our food and health podcast. And actually, we did actually note that in the test kitchen when we tasted that. So would you like to dispense your own mayo, Monica? I have.
No, please go ahead and dispense both.
All right.
But and does yeast extract automatically infer that that's MSG?
It is one of the ways you can put MSG in food and label it as something else.
Mm.
And I said, you know, with kids who have these acute reactions to it, they really need to have it under a uniform name. And the FDA said, ha, 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 ha.
And so, again, there have always been the questions about whether or not MSG is rightfully demonized because
who have acute and even non-acute reactions to it, I think they do believe it is because it can have some really serious repercussions for people's health.
So one of the things that we like about the new bottle is that there is a straight tip and then a decorator tip, getting away from the acute reactions right now. And does it have instructions on
that
bottle?
How would you like your anaphylactic shock? In a decorator tip or a straight tip?
Okay. For people who will not have acute reactions.
I like the star tip, although I can never see myself squirting plain mayonnaise on anything. I like the idea just in case.
Me too. Well, exactly, because you can use it as a decorator. Okay, so I'm going to hand over some of the brand new Chipotle Ranch Flamin' Hots to Monica, the old and new QP over the control board. I'm going to hand this over to you, Bill, in just a moment. So Bill is reading the instructions on the ramen because, as kids know, as I'm sure Monica's daughter, Miranda, who just graduated from eighth grade today, congratulations, Miranda. You know how to open this. But Bill, all right, so you're looking at the instructions.
You got to punch the marble down.
Yeah. Does it have the instructions on there and how to open it?
Yeah, but I think I might have broken the cap.
No. That should be, you just basically hold it and then you want to cover it.
Is this going to squirt all over me?
It should not, but I...
I got my Chicago Tribune shirt on.
You do. You have your dapper Chicago Tribune shirt on. And
I'm not strong enough.
Then I'm for sure. So the way that these bottles open is that there is a marble at the top. So
why would that marble be on the top anyway?
Because that's one
the
of
way
the things.
They close it.
That's the way they close it, hold in the carbonation, and it's like it's sort of the trick. So there is like a little. It looks like a push pin, almost like a flat plastic push pin, and we push it down. Boy, I don't want to. Since there's still people around here, be easy. I better turn around and put
it
on.
Have you done this already? Have you done this
before? I've done this before. Hold on a second. Okay, I'm going to turn around. You guys continue. So Monica and Bill, you're tasting it. Can you describe the flavors of the Chipotle Ranch? Because, Bill, you know that Monica's a big Flamin' Hot Cheetos connoisseur.
I like the color.
It's an umami explosion.
Well, I like the crunchiness of it. I'm not a huge fan of Flaming Hot Cheetos.
All right. So I actually put it on the floor way far away from the control board just in case after all the shaking. So you put the plastic tab over the marble, but then also when you pour it, you have to sort of hold the marble, like catch it. It's like a game between these little indentations. So
well, what happens if you don't do that?
It'll just bubble and block the top here.
And there's little air bubbles sticking, carbonation bubbles sticking to the bowl.
Yeah. Do you want to try pouring it? So I'm going to pour a little bit here for Monica. And Bill, if you'd like to pour yourself some. So Monica, I'm handing over to you the yogurt-flavored ramenet.
Is it a perfect round, that marble?
I'm not sure, actually. It does look typically pretty round. And so ramenet is kind of the Japanese loan word for lemonade. And so, but now this ramenet comes in many different flavors, and the yogurt flavor is one of the fairly more unusual or newer ones. I'm going to pour myself some here, too. Bill, you're taking a sip. What do you think of the yogurt-flavored ramenet that pairs nicely with the QP mayo?
I don't think it really goes with the Flaming Hot Cheeto, but whatever. I it's not bad. It has sort of sweetness that's not overly assertive. It's mild. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily go, oh, wow, it's yogurt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, but it does actually. It does have that sort of slightly yogurt flavor.
Tastes like cream soda.
Yeah. It's like a Japanese cream soda. I don't know if there's any dairy
what's
in
on
here.
What's the finish?
Cream soda.
What would you pair it with? I mean, it's not super, super, super sweet.
Maybe the kind of the same thing you would have a Gewürz Schmino with.
Oh, so like kind of
Chinese
spicy.
Food.
Yeah. So maybe with the Flamin' Hot Cheetos and the Kewpie Mayo, it is actually kind of a good pairing. Yeah. So for this special guest-hosted episode with our dear friend and colleague, Bill Daly, will we eat and drink the Kewpie Mayo with and without MSG and the yogurt-flavored ramune? Will we eat and drink it? Yes?
There's a little too much cheesiness in it for it to really pair well, but it's not bad.
What? Monica, you must be getting soft in your returning age here.
What I have a hankering for, though? I'd love to have, like, a green olive with this.
Oh. And we can go over to Billy Goat and see if they'll let us have a green olive. Chewing is an independent production of me, Louisa Chu, and the back from writing her book, Monica Eng.
Our producer is Iris Lin.
Listen to all our episodes at chewing.xyz and chicagotribune.com/chewingpodcast.
And please subscribe to Chewing for free wherever you get your podcasts and rate and review us while you're there.
Plus, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/chewingpodcast.
And follow Chewing on Twitter at chewingpodcast.
Thank you for listening to Chewing. I'm Louisa Chu.
And I'm Bill Daly. And until next episode in 2 weeks, keep it saucy, Chicago.